How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. So this guy comes out, goes into a bar with a shotgun. No, he robs a Jamaican store, gets the money, runs out. First call, we just got robbed, guy shotgun, goes into a bar. He puts a dollar down, asks the bartender with his shotgun, asks the bartender for a dollar's worth of beer. So the bartender gives him a beer like that big, gives him the dollar, kills the beer, holds a shotgun up, says for my people, and takes off. So now we're chasing him through the street. I pick him up. And conveniently enough, it's in a Dunkin' Donuts parking lot. We surround him. He pulled the shotgun out on his cop, Ruddy, and then I just started laying down fire, and he ducked down.
All right, everybody, welcome back to part two of episode 196 on the Game of Crimes with Murph in the Morning. I'm your host, Murph. That's why I call it Murph in the Morning. I don't know why we say in the morning, because that morning has nothing to do with it. It just sounds good, right? I think my wife came up with that. And you know, I stood up to her and I said, yes, dear. But just want to welcome you all back. Our guest today is Nick. Say your last name for me, Nick.
Grace.
Grace. There you go. That was easy. That sounded harder yesterday.
Jurace.
Okay, that screwed it up. Jurace.
There you go. Also, I've been called worse.
And I said yesterday, I'm just going to call him Nick because I screwed up his last name and I did it again. So we talked yesterday, too, about old dog learning new tricks. I'm the old dog here.
You got an iPhone now, don't you? Did you go out and buy one?
No. Still going to the Android. And this is brand new. We just switched over carriers and I got a new phone out of it. So it's going to be a while. When I do, though, I'll probably be calling you and say, Nick, how do I make this work?
Yeah. FaceTime me. I got you.
Because I always call the kids when I need something computerized done because they know how to do it. I don't. All right. So Nick here, if you remember, is a third generation law enforcement professional. He was a police officer with the city of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, city of brotherly love, which did you see any of that brotherly love while you were there?
Not all the time.
Yeah, did you feel like you were being bent over a lot, did you?
Oh, yeah. Yep, no lube.
Understood.
How much love there was.
If you haven't listened to episode one, please go back and listen to that, just because it sets the groundwork for what we're going to talk about today. And we finished up yesterday where Nick had graduated the academy. He's now out on patrol at District 24. Talked a little bit about that district and some of the things. I love the city of Philadelphia as far as being a tourist up there. I think the people talk funny, and you're going to hear Nick here.
Yeah, water, coffee.
Support my thoughts.
Water, ice.
Yeah, how do you say W-A-S-H?
Wash?
Yeah.
Okay. Wash.
It's not W-A-R-S-H?
No, I don't. There's no R's on our S's.
Maybe that's a Southern thing. I don't know.
Yeah, nope, wash.
He thinks I talk funny. I don't understand that.
Definitely do talk funny.
So we had a great time yesterday, and it's going to continue today, I promise you. Nick was out on patrol, and somewhere along the lines, I thought he got involved in narcotics. And so I just asked him before we started today's recording, and just tell us what your venture was or your potential venture was into the narcotics field.
All right. So, again, the 24th District is loaded with narcotics. I didn't like to mess around with narcotics. It's an easy way to get yourself jammed up. But mm-hmm. I did this undercover work for several months during the RNC. And I guess you're familiar with the McLaughlin Group?
No.
Okay, so that's a really big agency. It does a lot of trainings. I'm surprised you never heard of them. They're really big, and I believe they have a lot of federal contracts and do a lot of training. So a lot of police commissioners were going to these McLaughlin Group trainings, and I met a few commissioners from the area, and this one guy was like, man, you look like you're 16. Started talking to me, seeing what I was doing. He wanted to hire me to pretty much be like Johnny Depp in 21 Jump Street for Northampton Township. He wanted to put me in one of the high schools and be a narc. And, he called up Philly. Philly wouldn't lend me out, which I know they've done. They can do to the feds, but apparently they can't do to other agencies. So they would have had to hire me. And small departments, the sergeant who led the narcotics unit was vehemently against hiring me. He wanted one of his inside people to do it, and it got struck down. So my career could have went a whole different path. Who the hell knows what happened, good or bad.
But I ask you, after you told me that, I ask you, did you want to do that? What was your response?
Oh, hell yeah, man. Johnny Depp and 21 Jump Street. Again, I hated school. I could go back and learn and get paid to do it this time.
Exactly. If you failed the test, it wouldn't matter, right?
Yeah, it wouldn't matter. Who knows what that would have looked like? Drinking at keg parties again down in the woods? Dang, I'm all for it.
Oh, man. You would have been in so much trouble.
Oh, yeah, I know. I definitely would have.
That would have been a very short-lived law enforcement career, I'm afraid.
I think you might be right.
But now in the year 2000, there was some event that happened in Philly that you were selected to work on that, right?
Yeah, so let me I got one story for you. It's pretty interesting. When I was doing I told you we went out that month field training. I worked with this guy, Sergeant John Hart. Great guy. A lot of these people, when these recruits came out, treated them like shit because they didn't trust them. They thought we might be narking on them, there to spy. And this guy was nothing but love, really helped me out. He was a really awesome guy. In fact, I wanted to go to the 12th. My dad was like, you're out of your mind. That's a punishment. People go to the 12th are punished. Because I loved it so much. It was great. And he's like, trust me, you'll be happy when you go to the 24th. And he was right. And it's like an hour and a half drive to get there in the morning with traffic. So I'm working with Sergeant Hart, and the entire district is busy. And there's a person with a gun call at this mart and in multiple calls, which, you know, is probably found a job. I didn't know that at the time because I'm brand new. Mm-hmm. And he's like, she goes, we're it. We're the only people available. We're going to take it. And multiple calls, because it's probably going to be found. It. He's just telling me what to do. And it's a description is like a large black man pistol whipped another vendor. And we get to the mart, and it's like huge warehouse with stalls. You know what I mean? Like walkways, really big. We walk in there and we turn the corner, and man, down there is the guy fit the descriptions, the biggest black guy I've ever seen in my life. He's bigger than Shaq. And he's supposed to be the one with the gun. And I was questioning my life decisions at this point. Like, and even I heard him, like, he was defeated, like, which hurt my soul. I'm like, it's bothering this dude. And he just, like, looked at me and goes, stay confident. We're in charge. We have to go handle this. And that was the longest walk of my life, like 75 yards to the biggest man in the world. And you know what? I learned right there, don't judge a book by its cover. Nicest guy in the world. He was awesome. Yeah. The shopkeeper that allegedly got pistoled with was the one with the gun.
Really?
Yep. Yep. Nice. And I thank God that that was the nicest guy in the world. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
He would have did some serious damage. That guy was humongous. And I was scared. So, yeah, that was my first. I was like, do I really want to do this job? Like, what the hell did I do get myself into?
That is so true, man. That you just, you know, you misread situations. You try not to, but you do.
Yeah, so it was a good learning lesson. And then an old salty lieutenant from Vietnam says he knew my dad. And he was not happy that he had to ride around with me.
Yeah.
But he was kind of, I guess because of my dad, he was kind of polite. And he goes, let me give you some advice on all we don't give people in the police department. He says, the toes you tread on today might be attached to the ass you kiss tomorrow. He was right. I've watched that in the police department many times over.
That's a pretty profound statement.
It is.
And 100% true.
It's 1% true, or 100%. You know, not that I'm kissing asses, but, you know, you better watch out. The person you're over might be your boss. It ain't about kissing asses.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for cursing. I got to stop.
Well, we'll dock part of your pay today.
There you go. So we'll fast forward. I got a few months on now. You know, I'm feeling myself. Things are good. I've done a few narcotics arrests. You know, I'm just trying to fit in. And I'm taking a little bit of each cop I work with and seeing where I want to go with this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was kind of – at that point, I was a little bit interested in narcotics. I was making a lot – you know, some narcotics arrests. Nothing great. So I get called down to internal affairs. And I'm like, what the hell? And I'm in this office with a couple other cops that I don't recognize. And they walk in, like out of the movie, and just throw down a thing of pictures. This is old 2000, so they're developed pictures. And you'd recognize that. And I'm just like, oh, man, like, what did I get caught into that I didn't know that I was in? Because I wasn't doing anything bad. And ended up being protesters. And I'm like, they're protesters? Like, what is it? They're like, oh, this is why you're here. You guys look real young. You're new. We want you guys to go deep undercover and get involved with the precursor to Antifa. So Antifa wasn't really Antifa yet in 2000, but they were starting. It was that global anarchist group. You know, it was like the starting of Antifa. And they wanted us to become Antifa. Go hang out with them, live with them, find out what they're doing. For months, we walk around without a gun and a badge. And we attended these scummies. You know, they put plays on. You know, they really hated the government, hated Bush, hated cops. We were hanging out with them. Yeah, I sent you one picture. I was in fatigues and stuff like that because I had to dressed. Although I was a little too clean. Mm-hmm. When I got outside, I dirtied myself up a little bit. But that's, yeah, we walked around without a badge or a gun for several months doing this job. And again, it's primitive to what you did. It's nothing compared to what you did whatsoever. But yeah, you had to start out small, start hanging out around South Street at the bookstores and getting flyers and going to their events and befriending some people and getting invited to the houses, just hanging out and to their camps where we were supposed to sleep at. And they baked this bread and they're making this like medieval gruel. You know, they're just, you know, it's just, we're like, oh, yeah, we're going to go back to our tent. And we just went to hell home, you know. And, you know, that was leading up to Republican National Convention. And we wouldn't really see what our role was. But, you know, we were doing the jobs, and we had a great group. There was about eight of us, and we were attached to HIDA, high-intensity drug trafficking agency, right, the HIDA group.
Right.
Which a lot of Philly cops were assigned to, though. So they attached us to them. And our police commissioner at the time, Timoney, from New York, who I don't like that man one bit. He's a piece of shit. God rest his soul. He's not around anymore.
Now, don't hold back. Tell us how you really feel.
He was a politician. That's all he cared about. So these guys, these protesters were making a lot of equipment to hurt cops. Also, like the civil disobedience equipment. They had warehouses all over the city. And a few of them filled up balloons with BBs and dropped it on a cop car from like five floors. Hurt the cop. So we're like, screw that. We went in, shut the warehouse down. Well, that made national news. Timoney flipped. And this is like, we're starting to get into the Republican National Convention. Like all our work now where it's like, it's game time. Mm-hmm. And Captain has a meeting with us. He's like, just to let you know, it's a volunteer basis after this point. Timoney said that we're on our own. We're not covered anymore. He's pissed off because of the news and what we did. And we're like, what do you mean what we did? We shut down a warehouse of paraphernalia that was meant to hurt cops. They hurt cops. And he was pissed. They're like, if you guys want to go, you can go back to your districts. And we all stayed. Like, screw him. I'm going to do this job anyway. And we ended up, it was crazy, man. Just like you see now, like the rioting everywhere. But we developed a blueprint. When I say we, I was just a cog in it. I wasn't planning it. I was feeding information to the hire. So as Republican National Convention, that week starts, we're given a couple different stories in here. It was like code names. Like I would say Larry Johnson and you would say like Michael Evans or something like that was the response to know I was a cop.
Mm-hmm.
So it's getting bad. These guys, they're smashing cop cars, setting them on fire. And we're doing a lot to stop it. We're feeding information. We're at the head. A couple of us are hanging out with like the shot callers. And we knew like, all right, these guys are going to go down up to 17th and Chestnut. We're going to this store and this is what the plan is. And I'd sneak away with my Nextel and hit up whoever. And then we'd get cops in position to lead them away, lock people up before they can go to their objective.
Mm-hmm.
And we did this all week. So I'm walking through the mall one day. I'm hungry, me and my partner. And I'm like, oh, there's a bunch of cops gritting on us because we look like dirty protesters and we're in a mall. So I go to the bathroom to use the bathroom while five cops walk in behind me. Just like you thought. They had enough and they were going to get their piece of a protester putting their gloves on. I said, yo, Larry Evans. And a guy laughed and said, Michael Quincy, whatever it was. He goes, yeah, that's not working anymore. Because he goes, protesters found out about it. So he goes, I said, dude, I'm like, who are you? What's your name? And I pulled my Nextel out. I said, do you want me to hit up Timoney right now and let him know that Sergeant Ritchie said that that's not his name. Just Sergeant Smith said that's not going to work today. He goes, well, let me see your badge. I said, I don't have one on me. I said, you understand what I'm doing? And it was a standoff, man. I thought I was going to get my ass beat. And I said, that's fine. I said, here's my Nextel and I'm going to hit up Timoney right now. And before I did, he stopped me. He stopped me and then told his guys to leave. And we had a little bit of a conversation and that did diffuse the situation. But yeah, I came pretty close to get my ass whooped.
Wow.
Yep. Then I got walking. A highway guy grabbed me and slammed me up against the wall. I got hit with a few nightsticks. Luckily, I gave them the code and they backed off.
Yeah.
Yeah. He whispered in my ear, sorry. He goes, here, I'll rough you up a little bit, make it look good, which he did. Sent me on my way and got trampled on by a few horses. up at the front, the state police had their horses and a Philly cop. This guy, John Longmore, great guy, Philly cop, stepped on me with his horse. Felt great. We were in the shit, man. And then afterwards, they brought us into a room. Like, listen, we want to show you what you guys did. And he brought us into the command center. And it was like, that's the Secret Service, the ATF, the FBI, DEA, state police, the attorney general's office. And they're like, yeah, what you guys did, you saved the city millions of dollars. People got up clapping and stuff like that. It was corny, but it felt good. I said, oh, I didn't realize we're actually doing anything.
Yeah.
You know, like all that information you were sending us, we were able to thwart all their plans. Like, yeah, we played chess. And from that, from what we did then, I said, I'm just a part of it. I had no planning aspect of it. They put together plans on how to do mass arrests with school buses. And my bosses were a part of that. And they had this plan of riots and protesting. And it's worked for decades. We taught Seattle. We had representatives go to Seattle on how to handle mass protests, because that was really big in the 2000s. And a lot of cities across the country looked to Philly. And it was hurtful during the George Floyd riots, like all the work we did. And the new commissioners, you know, DEI hire, just disregarded all the lessons they learned from us and the RNC. And it was a complete mess. And it's not the cops' fault. We had bosses kneeling in solidarity with the protesters, which is a disgrace. And the attorney, you know, our district attorney, was looking at thousands of hours of film, not for protesters, but where he can lock cops up. He let 2,000 protesters got locked up for looting during the George Floyd riots. The wave of his scepter dropped all the charges, but went after plenty of good cops. But back to the RNC, yeah, that's what we did. My boss ended up, a school bus got stolen with animals from the zoo or something like that. My boss ended up finding it. Yeah, that made it, that was a good story. Yeah, from the RNC. But it was fun, man. And then, again, I don't like Tim any one bit. So in the history of the police department, when you do something like that, you go above and beyond. They always extended this courtesy to let you go to a unit. Mm-hmm. Where do you want to go? So our bosses came in and said, hey, give us your wish list. You guys did what you're asked. You did above and beyond. You guys are going to get thanked now. We all put units down, and Timmy flipped out. Who the F do they think they are? They're all going to the 12th district and the 18th. So now we had to fight just to go back to our district, let alone thank you, to go to a unit. So,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah, my boss had to go fight from high to get us at least put back to our units or to go to another district. A couple people were able to transfer districts, which really went up my ass. And then we had cameras. We were taking, obviously, the entire time taking pictures of the big players. We're in the internal affairs, confiscated all our pictures because the commissioner was worried about the outlook of the politics. Yep. All my pictures got confiscated. I was able to slide a couple to the side to keep for myself. I had great pictures too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I tried to get them back and
nope. Well, they're giving you an attaboy by letting you select the district you get assigned to. You didn't ask for that. They offered that to you.
They offered it. No, they offered us units. So I put, again, I wanted to do organized crime. That's where I wanted to go, stay in plain clothes. I put down organized crime or the field unit, which would plain clothes narcotics.
What a jerk.
Yep.
How long did he last?
Another year or two. Then he went somewhere else and he bounced around. He was more worried about politics than anything else.
Yeah.
He was a cops cop from New York. So, and my other gripe with him was 9/11. He left New York on bad terms, and they had a little bitching war with whoever he had up in New York. So 9/11 hit, and he put an order out pretty much instantly. Anyone caught up in New York City on duty or on their days off will be terminated immediately. Yep. So he set up a small contingent, and we all gave him the double barrel middle finger.
Mm-hmm.
And me and like 8 other cops went up there a couple of days afterwards, went to Ground Zero and helped out.
Yeah. Do you have any detrimental effects from doing that?
Well, you want me to tell you about that experience?
Yeah.
So 9/11, I'm working with my partner, Box, because he's shaped like a box. So that was his nickname. again, I'm new. It's September 2001, but I got like almost two years, not even. But me, you ask me, I'm a surly old veteran at this point. And I'm sitting at Wawa, and he's getting his coffee, and his stew bone comes up to me. Yeah, we're under attack. I'm like, what are you talking about, dude? I'm like, get away, man. I was hungover. I didn't want to be bothered. And he just kept going and going, and I'm like, what are you talking about? And something just sounded a little funny. I'm like, a plane hit what? I said, dude, it's probably a passenger plane. Beat it. He goes, I'm telling you, we're under attack. So I put the news on, and sure enough, it was shady. So I hit the horn, and Box comes out, and we fly up to the district, and just watching on TV and watch the building crumble made me sick. I thought, like, 50,000. I just watched 50,000 mm-hmm. people die. You know, I don't know. I assumed 20,000 were in that building. You know, I'm, like, sick to my stomach, so we all go, we don't know what's going on. If there's going to be an attack anywhere else, we go gas up all the vehicles, make sure we have fuel for everything. Couldn't call anyone. The cell phones were very primitive. Cell phones were down. You couldn't make any cell calls. You know, later that night, I'm on a bus going to a bar with my buddy who's a DJ. We're having a good old time. It didn't feel right, that going on. So the next day, we put together a group of people, and we're like, screw Timony. We're going to go up anyway. So we got shirts made that said Philly PD. I still have mine. And we got the badge around our neck. We head up to New York. We get up there, and on our way in, you can just see smoke billowing for 25, 30 miles out. And when we get to that road that kind of stretches before the tunnel, it was just miles of stands, and people were throwing new Timberlands, new everything, gas masks, cases of water and Gatorade, whatever we need because they know we're going in to help. We get there, and we go to a precinct. And the guy's like, oh, thank God you guys are here. He goes, how many of you are you? He goes, listen, you and you, I'm going to need you to go walk, footbeat, blah, blah, blah. Get your uniform and swear in. We're like, whoa. Like, we're here to go to ground zero. Timony said if we're caught in uniform, or if we're caught up here, period, we're getting fired. I can't put a uniform on. And again, he had some choice words for Timony.
Yeah.
He goes, all right, I'm going to get a wagon together or a van. I'm going to get you guys down to ground zero. So two crazy-ass cops pick us up, and we're going down the wrong street the wrong way, flying. And this is like normal traffic. You know, yeah. We're terrified,
yep.
Laughing and scared at the same time. Drops us off. You guys are going to have to go down the subway, take it over to whatever street, come back up, and you know there's a checkpoint there. If the National Guard's there, walk away, go to this other checkpoint, because the National Guard wasn't letting anybody in. He goes, find cops. The NYPD will let you in to help. And so we get down the subway, and they let the police academy class out to help.
Mm-hmm.
So we got these rookies that were just sworn in. And he comes over to us. He sees our badges. Our badges are similar to NYPD. He goes, I need help. And I'm like, what's wrong? He goes, well, I just got grabbed. It's a suitcase over there, and someone told me an Arab guy left it there. What do I do? I said, mm-hmm. Well, call your boss.
Yeah.
Call your boss. He pulls his cell phone. I said, not your cell phone. Go use the payphone. You got change. He goes, I got change. I said, all right, call your boss. And I go walking up the steps. He goes, where are you going? I said, I'm going. I'll wait here. So he calls. And I hear him go, yeah, boss, there's an Arab guy left. He goes, but what? And he puts his head down, hangs up, looks at me, and he goes, he wants me to open it. I said, all right, let me know how you make out. And I start walking. I said, I'm going to pop, dude. Give me a holler when it's open.
Mm-hmm.
Out up. It's fine. It's just closed. I'm like, all right, good luck. And we moved on down to ground zero, and we were there for the entire day. And one of the things that really struck me is one of the emergency service guys didn't have a mask on.
Mm.
And he goes, you're wasting your time. And boy, he was right. He says, none of these masks are graded for this shit. He goes, anyone down here, he says, we're all going to have cancer. The death toll is going to rise in about 10 to 20 years. A lot of people are going to die from this. He goes, so those masks ain't doing it. He goes, you want to leave it on and make you feel better about yourself? Go ahead. And he was right.
Mm-hmm.
He was right. And then I ran into the only woman killed, Maura Smith, I think her name was, her partner, was just freaking out, helped me find her. I know she's there, helped me find her. I don't know if it was her husband at the time. And yeah, it was terrible, man, walking around. And you had the pictures at the church of everyone who's missing at this point. It's 2 days later. You're not finding many survivors at this point.
Yeah. It was, we went up for meetings. This was quite a while after 9/11. We went up to do some meetings there at the DEA office in New York City. And at the end of the day, the guy said, hey, you know, and I had some state and local guys with me from Atlanta. I was an ASAC back then. And they're like, what is it you guys want to do? And I said, these guys want to visit Ground Zero. I said, not a problem. You know, so this was probably 6 o'clock in the evening. So they said, give us just a few minutes. And they come and get us. And they said, hey, we got some cars downstairs waiting on you. So we go down and it's some plain unmarked NYPD cars, the old Crown Vicks. And they had their sirens tied into their horns. And so we take off and it's kind of still rush hour traffic. And every time we'd come to a stop, they're hitting that horn. Doot, doot, doot. People are moving out of the way. And then we get to where traffic just, you know, stops. So we'd go drive up on the sidewalk. And I'm thinking, dude, this is the way you do it. You know. But we got down to Ground Zero and they had built that walkway, that wooden walkway with all those pictures and all those messages. Let me tell you what, when you see that, if you didn't tear up, you were a cold hearted son of a gun.
Yeah.
It was just heartbreaking.
It took me a long time to be able to talk about it or look at getting any 9/11 stuff. I wouldn't watch it. I guess my old age of getting soft, I would definitely get water in my eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. And then they had two Port Authority cops took us into their trailers. That's what they were using as offices now. And they were there for 9/11, and they spent about 2 hours just telling us everything that happened. There's times when you just got tears running down your cheeks because it's such a horrible event that happened to our country. And that 2 hours seemed like you were there 15 minutes. I mean, it was just captivating. It was listening to it's the fact that law enforcement and first responders were killed in this trying to help others.
Yep. Yeah, it was a war zone, man. I mean, we walked by twisted fire truck that was just twisted up like a pretzel. Papers. There's billions of papers everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Did you have any long-term effects from working down there?
We were only there for 18 hours. Someone reached out to me recently and said, I need to go get checked. Even if you're there for 2 hours during them first few weeks, especially first couple of days, he goes, you need to go get checked out, which I plan to do, but I don't think I have anything going on with it.
Okay.
And then from there, my next terrorism story is I pull up on a bunch of Arab guys in the 24th District. We have a pretty big port. Philadelphia has a big commerce port. Mm-hmm. And I believe we had the biggest Navy yard in the country at one point. It was very instrumental during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of oil refineries in my district. And these Arab guys were out in schematics, taking pictures. And this is probably summer 2002. Yeah, probably summer 2002. And, I stop them, confiscate their shit, call it in, and then, radio comes over. Don't go anywhere. I was going to bring them into the district. And they're like, don't go anywhere. Someone's going to come meet you. And, like, three black SUVs show up, all blacked out. Guys in suits comes out. They take my 48 book, took everything out of my car that I had to do, the maps and shit, and took all four guys and left.
Never be seen again.
Never be seen or heard of again.
I wonder if Guantanamo Bay was in their future.
Yeah, I don't know, man. That was it. Puff. I had no activity. I'm like, what do? I had something.
Wow.
Yep.
That was that just post 9/11?
Yeah, it was 2002. So I believe summer 2002. I might have maybe. Yeah, I think it was definitely summer 2002.
There was, trying to remember, it was my first or second time in D.C., first time I was assigned to special operations, then I went up to a couple of other offices years later. But anyway, where I lived out in Virginia, my office was in, at that time it was in Merryfield, a section called Merryfield, which is, I think it's Arlington County, or maybe Fairfax. Anyway, so I had a G car, a government unmarked police car. If you shot through the airport, there was a way that you could do a U-turn and come back down. And there was a free road that paralleled a toll road. And that way you didn't have to pay the tolls. And if you had a police car, you just flash your lights and they just wave at you. Well, I'm getting ready to go up on this ramp and there's this car that's blocking the ramp. And so I stop behind him and he's taking pictures of the ramp. And so I follow him on up the top. He's taking pictures left and right. This is the entrance to Dulles Airport. Okay. And then I watch him. He goes across the bridge. He stops and takes pictures of everything there. And then he comes down the ramp, and I'm thinking, what the hell? So I follow him a little bit. I get on the radio and call, hey, have the Metro Airport Police meet me out here. And I light him up, pull him over. And so he looked like he was of Arab descent. I think that'd probably be the politically correct way to say it. And it seemed like it took forever. And he'd get out of his car and I'd stand out and I'd like, get back in your car. I will be with you in just a minute. And so he would, he complied. He wasn't combative at all. So anyway, the airport cops finally show up. They bring one in behind me. One comes down the other way and they get out and they walk over and like, what's going on? And I explained everything to them and they're like, okay, we'll check it out. I said, well, you got it. I'll leave. And they're like, no, stick around. We'll let you know what's going on. So they come back and they're like, well, here's his story. He got a ticket for using that same ramp that I was going to use. He got a ticket because you're not supposed to do that, right? And he was getting ready to go to court later that day, and he wanted to take pictures of the ramps and the signs and everything for his defense. Okay. I said, you believe him? They're like, well, sure, why not? I said, did you ask him for his court summons? Did you see the date that he's supposed to be in court? He's saying he's supposed to be there today. No, I didn't think about that. Like, where is he now? Well, we're going to cut him loose. Okay. See something, say something.
Yeah. See something, say something. Do something.
Exactly. So I was a little disappointed, but I met a few of those guys later on in life. And I mean, there's some qualified police officers that work both National Airport, D.C., right, and Dulles Airport out in Virginia.
The airport, one thing I want to touch on before, the state of America after 9/11, because 2000, it was left not as crazy as it is today, but it was bad. You know, sentiments towards police was not good. Mm-hmm. Again, not as bad as today, but it wasn't great. And then it was post Rodney King was still brought up. It was only 6 years after that. So that you heard a lot of that still and a little bit more video cameras more abundant. So you would catch some shit. And even when you're making lawful arrests to civilians, it looks like you're hurting someone. No, they never tried to handcuff a 100-pound girl who don't want to be handcuffed. It takes three grown men to do it without hurting them. Might look like we're hurting them, but we're trying not to. We're trying to cuff them. After 9/11, like even up in New York, everywhere we went, people cried, hugged us, clapped. I mean, it was almost embarrassing. But everywhere we went, people were thanking us. And even in uniform down in Philly for several months, we love you guys. Thank you. Like we became heroes again.
Yeah.
And didn't take long for that to stop.
No.
It went back the other way. But the pendulum swung real far right, real quick. And again, we can get into the weeds with that, with George Bush and the Patriot Act, and a lot of that shouldn't have happened and led to where we're at today because of that swing. Mm-hmm. But it was nice to see the law enforcement get its kudos from people and get the respect back, even for a little bit.
And not just law enforcement, but the patriotism that you saw from everybody then. There were every car had flags tied to their antennas. You go across the bridges, you know, the overhead bridges, you'd see American flags hanging off.
My mom, we were driving somewhere together, and I believe like our car dealership had one of the largest flags in the country, if not the largest in the state. Mm-hmm. And my mom's like, it's eerie without any planes, because we live next to an airport. I said, yeah. She goes, yeah. I said, yeah, it is. And we see the big American flag, and she goes, it looks different, doesn't it? I said, yeah, it does, Mom.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take 5 before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
That's exactly right, man. I mean, you can just talking about it and reminiscing about those days, that your patriotic pride just starts to grow sitting here chit-chatting about it. So, and I don't want to go too far into this, but you had a life-altering event on the police department.
Yeah. So, well, how much time we got? 15, 20 minutes?
Yeah, we're good.
All right. So, you know, my career from there is just running and gunning as a cop, man. Yeah. And it's a shame. Stupid 24-year-old. I was bored. You just get disenfranchised. Mm-hmm. You're disgruntled with, because now I got 5 years on and I know what's going on. Mm-hmm. I was the guy you would come to if you wanted to do something the correct way or you wanted to get around the rules. I knew the rule book inside and out. And guys with 20 years on would come to me. Guys just starting would come to me. Like everyone, one guy's like, man, the car's a little dented, scratched up. I said, all right. What do you want to do? Do you want to do it the right way? Or do you want to go home today and not be dinged for a car accident? I want to go home. I said, go see Javier, be in Indiana, let him know I sent you. He'll pull the dents out for you real quick. And that's what we did. Yeah, you could call me at 2 a.m. and say, I need 1,000 pair of pink and purple polka dot boxers. And by 6 a.m., I'll have 1,000 pair of pink. Yeah, that's the kind of guy I was at that point.
The man with the hooks.
Yeah, so I was just like, screw this, man. I want to go be a cop on the beach. And I left. I bounced. I went to Florida. I went to Hollywood, Florida. So I and at that point, 2004, I'm living in a $1 million house in 2004, living with a friend of mine. I pulled my pension out. I'm partying like a rock star. Yeah, I got like 45 grand in Miami. I'm popping bottles. I had a Swedish bikini team around me one night. It was a great time. Yeah, but I was going to kill myself. And I was missing my parents. And the day they called me, like, all right, Hollywood's like, all right, I know it's, you know, you waited 3 months, but here it is, come on in. And I was like, yeah, I'm in the airport, I'm going home. So Philly had a thing where you have a year. If you leave, you have a year, you can come back, no questions, good to go. And of course, I'm a trailblazer. I'm the first one denied to come back. City's broke, our mayor bankrupted the city, and I was denied. I couldn't believe it. And me and a couple other cops couldn't come back. So now I'm working in a factory, right? Standing up, wiring, which was great money. The guy loved ex-cops, and he paid overtime. I was making like $1,700 cash a week at this factory. So I'm not hurting for money, but it sucked.
Yeah.
It 12 hours of grueling work. And I get a letter for a commendation ceremony for a shooting I was in. And I'm pissed off. I tell my dad, look at this. And he's like, let's go. I'm like, screw them. They don't hire me back. They're going to give me an award for a shooting I was in. So I end up going. He talks me into it. And the commissioner at the time, Sylvester Johnson, great guy, knew my dad. My dad said, yo, Sly, what's going on? You're giving this kid an award and you won't hire him back. You know, it's probably one of the best awards you can get. And he goes, what's going on? And he told him, he calls an assistant over and she gets my information. And then I said, it was very nice meeting you. And he gives me a hug and whispers in my ear. He goes, you're going to have a very Merry Christmas. This is right around Christmas time. Like, whatever. I go home. I said, Mom, I'm going to sleep. Taking a nap. I don't have to be at the factory, so I'm just going to nap. And she screams my name 20 minutes later. Get the phone. I get the phone, and it's the police commissioner's office. Report to PAB Monday morning. You're back. So, and that opened the door up for all the other cops that were told no, too. I had another guy I worked with, this guy Pablo. They opened the door for him, too. He got back. He was like, thanks, man. Appreciate what you did.
Nice.
Yeah, so I got back on the job, but I was punished. My captain was mad at me for leaving, so I had to go on last out. And me and the sergeant didn't really get along. So I go to him, and he listened, great guy. I said, listen, I know whatever the difference is. I just want to keep my head down and just do my job. All I ask is for his clean slate. And he says, listen, you have a clean slate with me, do your job, and we'll be good. And 3 months later, he wrote me a glowing review. He says, I've never seen a cop able to find a stolen car without a computer like Nick. I would print, you know, what a hot sheet had. It would have all the license plates, like 120 of them that were stolen in the last 2 weeks. And I'd blow it up, tape it how's that thing called?
Dashboard.
Yeah, dashboard. Tape it to the dashboard because, you know, none of our computers worked. I would get stolen cars either off of that or, you know, all this broken vent windows, high beams on, you know, the flashers on, shit like that. And got a ton of stolen cars, and he wrote me a letter, and it got me off the last out back to my old squad.
Wow.
So that was good. So, yeah, the shooting I was in, that I got that award, it's funny, my partner, we called slide time. He slid out for the night.
Mm-hmm.
Still technically working. I carried him on the log, and listen, yeah, if that makes me a dirty cop, I'm a dirty cop. Everyone does slide time. It is what it is. It's the way you reward your employees.
Yeah.
So he slid out to go play darts. So I had to call him. I was like, hey, George, this is what? I'm like, you got to use 6 hours vacation. What'd you do? I said, I got into a shooting. He goes, no, you didn't. I was like, yeah, I did. So this guy that comes out, goes into a bar with a shotgun, robs the bar. No, he robs a Jamaican store, gets the money, runs out, first call. We just got robbed, guy's shotgun, goes into a bar. He puts a dollar down, asks the bartender with his shotgun, asks the bartender for a dollar's worth of beer. So the bartender gives him a beer like that big, gives him the dollar, kills the beer, holds a shotgun up and says, for my people, and takes off. So now we're chasing him through the streets. I pick him up, and conveniently enough, it's in a Dunkin' Donuts parking lot. You know, we surround him. And to me, he pulled the shotgun out on his cop Ruddy, and then I just started laying down fire, and he ducked down. What I didn't know was the car is parked and there's a wall. He was on the other side of the wall. I thought he was in front of the car.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm moving as I'm shooting. I'm moving to the left, and I'm shooting through the car to the hood to where he's at. But he was on the other side of the wall. And two yahoos from the 15th run up and just rush him. And meanwhile, he's crouched down taking cover from the fire, and they just run at him as we're shooting, which is stupid because you're getting in a crossfire. And two, the guys had a shotgun pointed at him. Thank God he laid it down. And they cuffed him just so they can get the arrest. Two dumbasses. Anyway.
Jeez.
Yep, so they can get the arrest. He should have read that report. Those guys were real heroes, man, let me tell you. And because we were in a shooting, we couldn't write anything. We couldn't. You know, I got my gun taken from me. And I remember I got reprimanded from the lieutenant at Internal Affairs. Told me I shot too many times. So I said,
how many shootings you been in there, big boy?
I said, yeah, I let off. He goes, how many do you think you let off at the time? I'm like, three. I let off nine. I said, okay. I said, so what's the correct amount of shots that I should let off when there's a semi-auto shotgun pointed at my partner?
Yeah.
Well, I can't tell you that. I said, well, obviously, I said, sir, there's a number. So why don't you tell me what the number is, since nine is not the number, and that's too much. And he basically told me, get the hell out of here, smart ass.
Well, he's the one that brought it up.
Yeah, yeah, that's a true story, man. It's our internal affairs.
And I'll bet you he's never been in a shooting incident.
Oh, absolutely not. I asked about him. He was a desk jockey's entire career.
Desk weenie. Yep. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so that was a shooting I was in. And you know what? We had court for him. I thank God I didn't kill him. He was legitimately, absolutely certifiably insane.
Oh, yeah.
He's at the nut house getting his help. Worked out for the best. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, and I was telling you before, like, I was kind of embarrassed. My dad went 30 years, never shot his gun. Pulled my gun 1,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to get to a shooting, and I was like a little embarrassed about it. My dad's like, listen, you did what you had to do, and it was the right thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just part of the job. You hope you don't ever have to, but sometimes you do.
Yeah, and I know it's getting violent. I know two cops that I'm friends with. Tommy Morrow shot in the shoulder. He was on our podcast, Good Cop, Bad Cop podcast. He's still active. And I had another guy, Paul, got shot in the leg twice. You know, he just retired recently.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's getting more and more violent out there today.
It is.
I don't know that I could work uniform today, to be honest with you.
No, we both end up locked up. I caught the tail end of being a real cop. And I'm not saying that as me being the real cop, because I'm a badass. I'm just talking about policing, being able to do real police work.
Right. Yeah, where you actually could, you can make a decision on the street. You had the, yeah, you had the street discretion.
And this is at about 2003, I got a call, a person with a gun, multiple calls. So again, it's real. My partner, again, George was, I don't know what George was doing. George was doing something else. He wasn't there.
Were you close to Dunkin' Donuts?
No, not this time. We're on Emerald Street. And of course, pull up and everyone's saying, he said he's going to kill himself. He's got a gun in his pocket. He's got a gun. And it's a black male. He's against the wall, hand in his pocket like this. And he's telling me he wants to die. I'm going to shoot you, talking to me. And I have my gun on him. And I'm, you know, trying to be like, hey, does he have a gun? Is that a gun? Because he has his hand in his pocket. He's telling me he's got a gun. And I had to, and then of course in my mind's like, man, if I shoot an unarmed black guy, I'm going to go to jail. Right. And that's in 2003.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that was, even then it was a thought in my mind, and he did it. He drew and I didn't shoot because I didn't think he had a gun, and he didn't have a gun, and I made the right call. But who knows if he had a gun, if I would have won that draw or not. I would like to think I would have. It was a pretty fast shot. But that was on my mind then. And yeah, it's policing today. It's even now it's worse. Now what are you going to do? Now cops are getting killed because they're afraid to shoot.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, so you leave the department early, right?
Yeah, I ended up leaving. I got injured on duty. I took an inch of my collarbone out. The shoulder hasn't been the same. You know, and they don't let you work the desk. You have to be able to go in the uniform and be a full cop. So I ended up retiring, which is for the best. It's worked out well for me. I got in security. I go from being cop to working for $11 an hour at a hotel for a year so I can get some kind of security manager. Oh, yeah, it hurt, man. Yeah, especially running to friends. Oh, what are you doing? I'm hotel security. Yeah. Aren't you a cop? I was. Yeah. Not anymore. Then I got into the security management. Been here 10 years. Dirty industry. Can't wait to get out of it. In 2000, I was tired of our district attorney. I started a political action committee called Protect Our Police.
In 2000, while you're still on the job?
Nope, I'm off. I retired in 2011. So nine years ago.
Yeah.
I've been discussing this with a political friend of mine, and then Jimmy O'Connor ends up getting murdered, a SWAT cop, by a scumbag that should have been in prison. Our district attorney let him out early. And I was already in the works of doing this political action committee, and that kind of pushed me over the edge, and I went full steam ahead and ended up raising $1.4 million. And it was to help get pro police officials elected at the state and local level. I told you before, we had 270 candidates apply. We endorsed we had like almost a 60% success rate. We endorsed like 123. We had almost 70 or 65, got 15 states elected. We helped qualified immunity stay in New Hampshire with all the state reps we helped get elected up there. So that saved qualified immunity. One of the things I'm most proud of.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent $500,000 in Philly trying to get this scumbag, Larry Krasner, thrown out of office. Didn't work. If I could have done it over, I'd do it a year early and do an education campaign trying to explain to people how the district attorney really affects crime in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a real disconnect between the citizens and what the district attorney really does and how his policies are really affecting Philly. And I could say today there's over a dozen, maybe more people would be alive today, which is a staggering fact, if Larry Krasner was never the district attorney, one of them being a cop. It's staggering. So we lost that race, disbanded the political action committee, which hurt. Really wanted to get that bastard. But he's up for reelection, and we got a strong candidate, Judge Dugan, going against him this May, and I hope it's going to win. He's going to win. I feel pretty confident about it. Then I started a podcast. I had this podcast of mine, Protect Our Police Pack, which is my logo here. I wanted to do it with a criminal, and I've had this on my mind for 3 years. Couldn't find the right person to do it with. And I ended up watching this documentary, The 7-5, and I'm like, that's my guy. Never envisioned the criminal being a former cop. So my partner is a dirty cop. He was a complete scumbag. I did 12 years in federal prison and turned his life around. He's helping cops in suicidal situations. I've seen the help that he's doing with mental health, mental awareness. You know, he's doing the right thing. He's turned his life around. He's a big ego, Mike Down, but we're doing a great job on the podcast. We got a lot of great guests. We're having a good time. We're in the top 15% of all video podcasts on Spotify or on Apple, Rumble, YouTube. And check us out, goodcopbadcoppodcast.com. And it's a lot of fun, man. I love podcasts. I love doing this. You know, we just blew through 2 hours like nothing. We didn't really talk about anything. Too busy.
It's just two cops telling war stories. And I want to back up just a second. When you had your pack running, and I just want to read, I read this out of an article that came out of the Washington Times, and this just lends perspective to what you're trying to do. And you're talking about Krasner, and that's the district attorney, right?
Yep.
For Philadelphia. So in 2017, I'm going to read this quote for quote right out of the paper. In 2017, the year before Mr. Krasner took office, 97% of Philadelphia's homicide victims were black, according to crime statistics. In 2020, 3 years later, when homicides jumped 40% from the previous year to a near record 499, 86% of the victims were black. So it jumped from 79% to 86% under Mr. Krasner's reign. Blacks are also disproportionately victims in shootings last year. While blacks comprise roughly 44% of the city's population, 84% of the victims in Philadelphia's 2,236 shootings were black. And this is according to police figures. And then jump down two paragraphs. While Mr. Krasner sharply reduced the number of incarcerated people in Philadelphia, the percentage of incarcerated people who are black ticked up, which seems in direct contrast to what he says he's trying to do.
He's full of shit.
Let's see. I thought there was one more section here. And this is, I guess, what I'm trying to get to. Who financially supported his election?
George Soros.
Who is?
One of the most evil men in the world. He's a billionaire who for fun, as he said, collapses small countries' economies. That's one of his hobbies. And when he was a teenager, he was the happiest times of his life were leading the Nazis to Jewish people. He was Jewish, but he's an atheist now. So when they throw out that bullshit of anti-Semitism because you bring up George Soros, well, he's an atheist. Can't be anti-Semite if he's an atheist.
Unbelievable. And he has his own PAC, Political Action Committee, the Justice and Public Safety PAC, which if you don't know anything about this guy, look him up.
Listen, kudos to him, man. He caught us sleeping at the wheel. He's been destabilizing our country through the criminal justice system with these radical district attorneys across the country. I was one of the first people to highlight that and bring that out. And that's what the PAC was supposed to bring out, a blueprint on how to beat them. But just people didn't care and didn't show up. Only 17% of the electorate showed up in Philly to vote on that race. No one's voting Republican. So the race in Philly is the primary. Whoever wins a Democratic primary is going to get it. But yeah, so I had two ethics violations, which that's on me. I was a day late filing my reports because I've never done it before. I'm not a politician. Making sure everything was correct, I was a day late. I got fined a couple $100 or something like that. So Krasner, when he talks about me, because he loves me, would like to say I'm unethical, my ethical violations. Meanwhile, he's breaking laws. He should be criminally tried. His PAC, which is against the law, was paying the salary of all his campaign staff, paying for the building they were in. Like, that's criminal. That's not missing a day of reporting. Mm-hmm. I reported a day late. He's conspiring events with the coordinator, which we call him Talcum X, the fake black guy. The hell's his name? Give me a second. I'll pull it up.
Yeah.
You'll know who I'm talking about. Sean King, Talcum X.
That's who Sean, to him?
Sean King was running the Real Justice PAC. So okay. He's coordinating events with Krasner, campaign events. It's against the law. And they got fined $30,000. That's it.
But that's not an ethics violation, though, is it?
No. Oh, no. That's completely unethical. That's criminal. It's a lot different than filing late. And then I had Stooges in the Inquirer. I'm a private citizen. I guess I'm not because I stepped out on the stage, which I had another person doing this with. We had a falling out. He left. So I ended up being the face of it. I always want to be in the background. So I had to step forward and do it. And I was on Fox and OAN and Newsmax a lot. And I became a Fox contributor. But I had this guy pretty much insinuating I was stealing money enough to where if I wanted to sue him for slander in the Inquirer, I was pretty close to being able to do that. I spoke to a lawyer and could have done that.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one line about Krasner with his ethics violation, but there are 16 articles about mine, about reporting a day late.
Wow.
Where all my money's going to is ridiculous. Every dollar we took in was accounted for and where it went.
Out of curiosity, does the Philadelphia Police Department have a union?
Yeah. I think we're the second largest union, police union in the country, Lodge 5.
Have you ever thought about being part of that panel?
I was at a meeting last night. There's a lot of internal strife going on right now. Yeah, I don't want anything to do with that.
Okay.
Yeah, not now. I thought about it. It wasn't worth it. I was friendly. The union helped us out. They gave us a lot of money because they wanted Krasner gone and to the pack. And it's a good thing. But right now, I don't want anything to do with the FOP.
Yeah.
I'm happy being a member and getting to go up and go to meetings and eat for free. And we have a great bar. Listen, you got to come up. You should see our lounge is amazing. It's one of the best restaurants in Northeast Philly.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really cool, man. You'll love it.
Even our little police department in Bluefield, we had an FOP. We had our own lodge. We had a range to go along with it. Nothing fancy like you're talking about, but that was our, you couldn't have a union, but that was our bargaining group.
Oh, that damn bar has cost me more money and more heartache. I met my first wife there bartending. We can't bartend as cops, but we're allowed to bartend at the union. So I was bartending at the union hall. I met my wife there. And then fast forward to 2000, I met my fiance there. At the new FOP. Yeah, I'm not with either.
You need to stay away from there, man.
Broken heart and empty wallet. A lot of broken dreams. No more women from the FOP.
I was going to say I love it, but I don't love it.
That's a warning. It's a towel's old as time. That's a warning to all you young cops.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, and you mentioned your podcast, Good Cop, Bad Cop podcast, started in September 24, right?
Yes, sir.
Your weekly true crime.
Yes, sir. Yeah, we talk about everyone. The guest we have this week dropping was a CEO, and we did a bonus episode with the contest queen. She has a system on winning contests. She won like 5,000 contests or something.
Really?
Yeah, she's cool, man. Yeah, she's a lot of fun. It was a fun 30 minutes.
I'll have to go back and listen to that.
Yeah, so we it drops today. And it drops April 23rd.
I've been playing Publisher's Clearinghouse for years and hadn't won a damn thing. No, yeah, wait, I don't want a smoker one time.
Right? Yeah, Ed McMahon. Wasn't Ed McMahon the Publisher Clearinghouse?
Probably.
Yeah,
that's you're not even old enough to remember him. How do you say
yeah,
that?
Hell yeah, yeah. Boy, I'm a 70s.
Yeah, I started as a cop in 75.
I know, man. I wasn't even a thought yet.
But so, listen, listeners, if you have not heard of or listened to the Good Cop, Bad Cop podcast, you need to go listen to that. Looking on social media, this is where I found Nick and his podcast. On Instagram, it's good_cop_bad_cop_podcast. Facebook is Good Cop, Bad Cop Podcast. TikTok, Good Cop, Bad Cop Podcast. On X, I couldn't find it, but I did find Nick J. Say your last name.
Gerace.
There you go. Gerace. I apologize, man. I'm just getting old. LinkedIn, I found him at Good Cop, Bad Cop, although I couldn't access it. It said no, I didn't have permission.
It's not mine.
Okay.
That's an old one that someone made a long time ago, but we'll be on LinkedIn soon.
Got it. And I found this on your website. Their website is goodcopbadcoppodcast.com, so go check them out. Show these guys some love. They're getting their feet on the ground. They've been up less than a year here. Show them support. If you thought appreciate you that. Enjoyed today's podcast, I'm pretty sure you're going to enjoy that one. I've actually met your co-host, Mike Dowd, right?
Yeah.
He is a character. I'll give him that much. And I got this off of your podcast. I just want to read it real quickly. Each episode features thought-provoking discussions where Nick and his partner dive deep into high-profile crimes, current events, and societal issues. Go over and check it out. I mean, you got nothing to lose. You're going to be driving down a highway anyway, so turn it on.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. People really, it's resonating. Everyone who watches and listens just reaches out and says, man, this is great. One of my most favorite new podcasts. It's growing pretty quickly. And we've done zero advertising. This is all just organic growth right now.
Yep.
And yeah, when we start ramping up the advertising, it's going to blow up.
Excellent. Are you guys on YouTube yet?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're on YouTube. We're almost hit the 1,000 sub. Hopefully this helps push us over.
I'm not big on YouTube. I mean, I want to be big on YouTube, but my followers have gotten me from 700 subscribers to where we're getting close to 1,400 now. So
that's great, man.
That was just in a matter of months. And that's the cool thing. The loyal people, you ask them to do something, they do it for you.
Yeah. I Uber part-time. I enjoy it. And I just get one subscriber at a time. I put my hat down and said, yo, pull your phone out and subscribe. It's good.
There you go.
Everyone I meet, I got to promote.
That's what it's all about. And that's one of the reasons that I've got Nick on here with us. I'm working with the guys at Anti-Hero Podcast, and it's all about helping each other.
They're great guys.
Even though we're all, well, Tyler's still active. He's with the Orange County SO here in Central Florida. But it's part of the law enforcement family where we continue to look out for each other. We try to anyway, help each other out.
So I got a question for you. We got a couple minutes left.
Yeah, yeah.
So how did Narcos come about? So I saw you. I told you about it. We saw me and my buddy, my best friend Joe, the ATF agent. We went and saw you at the Keswick Theater in Glenside, PA, and it was great, man. You guys, you and your partner, put a great show on. I was a little apprehensive. I'm like, yeah, how's this going to be able to translate to a live show? Man, you guys did great. It was awesome. How did that come about? Did you guys shop that, or did somebody come to you with the story?
This is the Reader's Digest version. A friend of mine in Northern Virginia was a small-time producer. He introduced me to two producers thinking that they would want to do something with the story, and they did, but they wanted to take our story and extract little bits and pieces and make political statements out of it. So I'm one of the most apolitical people you ever meet. It just, politics drives me up the freaking wall. I've got more years behind me than I have in front of me. And that particular topic, I am not wasting my time on. But, and some people might argue with it because sometimes I do get a little political. I try not to, though. Anyway, turned them down. And so about a year or so goes by, and a retired Marine called me that we'd worked with in South America. And hadn't talked to him in 20 years. He said, hey, there's a producer in Hollywood wants to talk to you guys about your story. And I said, we've been down this road twice. You get your hopes up, nothing happens. So please tell him thanks, but no thanks. Well, I don't know if you got any Marine friends, but they could be a little colorful in their language.
Yeah.
And he ripped me a new one on the phone, man. okay, I'll call the guy. So I called this guy, Eric Newman. He's the creator of the Narco series. We talked for a few minutes. He gives me his little spiel, and I said, thanks, but no thanks. And the phone got real quiet. And I think I know now because we have since learned that people will sell their soul to be on TV or be in a movie.
Amazing.
So he says, listen, I'm coming to DC in a month. He said, I'm bringing a couple writers on other business. Would you come and have dinner with us and let us just explain to you what we want to do? And you'll understand this, Nick. I'm thinking, this is going to be a free dinner at a really good restaurant. Yes, yes I will go. And it was. We went to a French restaurant. And you know how we are as cops. I know there's three guys coming. I know there's three white guys in this nice restaurant. And you can just pick people out. So I show up about 5 minutes late, walk around the restaurant, find them. I told the maitre d', hey, I meet some friends. I think they're already here. So he lets me walk through. And I find them. And I went over and leaned on the table. And I said, gentlemen, I got a suit on. Gentlemen, I've got information that one of you is holding some cocaine in your pocket. I'm a police officer, and I get your ass up on the wall. I'm very, very serious. And the two riders, their eyes just get big as saucers. And Eric looks at me and starts laughing. He's like, you're Murphy, aren't you? Yeah, I am. Well, the two riders about to crap their pants.
She has coke in her pocket.
They probably did. But anyway, we had a good dinner and listened to their plan. And at the end of the night, he said, so what are you going to do? And I said, well, let me talk to Javier. And I said, maybe we'll explore this with you and see where it goes. Now, they called me in February of 13, and we had that dinner in March of 13. By May, we had signed contracts with Netflix. At the end of June, I pulled the pin after 38 years as a cop. Javier pulled a little bit later that year. And in July, we were sitting in Hollywood writing the first episode of Narcos.
So you were writing it too, huh?
Well, we were consultants. Okay. That was the title, because if you're a writer, you make a lot more money than a consultant.
Yeah.
And everybody thinks that we became, you know, multimillionaires because of the Narcos series. Here's the truth. I made more as a working agent than I did getting my retirement check from the government and what Netflix paid me.
I believe that.
Yeah.
I believe that.
But what it did for us is it kicked off fire. We were already doing the speaking business just a few times a year. And man, that when the first season of Narcos came out, I think we did 86. In the next 12 months, I think we did 86 appearances around the world.
Yeah, it's great.
And now we're in our 10th year, still traveling around the world. We're doing maybe 20, 25 events a year. So a lot of law enforcement conferences, a lot of corporate events, been on the college, university circuit, all that stuff. But that's
as far as I'm concerned, Narcos is only the first two seasons when you guys are in it.
Now I got to pay you money now to send you a check.
I stopped watching after that. I'm like, this ain't as good as it was.
I appreciate you saying that, brother, because we say the same thing.
That's true.
And I will tell you that you may remember this from the show we did up there at the theater. The part about Javier being a ladies' man.
Uh-huh.
That's the one part that's true. He's a man slut.
Yeah, I remember that. Yep. Man after my own heart.
Buddy, Nick, thank you so much. I haven't laughed this much in a long time, especially in the first episode. I was trying to wipe tears out of my eyes.
I hope I didn't bore you. You know, we barely talked about anything. I hope I didn't bore your audience.
No, I don't think so. I think that's why they come over to Game of Crimes. They like to hear the inside stories of law enforcement. And for you listeners, thank you guys so much for coming back. These are the kind of guys I love to have on here because you hear the inside stories about what really goes on. You hear some things that you probably shouldn't have heard about somebody marking off for 6 hours and still being on the clock. But that's the reality.
I'll give you a real quick one. I know you're closing just because you're saying you're laughing. I was the big prankster in the district, but only if I liked you. If I didn't mess with you or I didn't like you, I didn't go nowhere near you. You know, people would – you know, things would happen to other people, and my name would be brought into it. I'm like, I don't even mess with you. No, but one of my things were I would get live chickens. And when you're on breakfast, I'd throw a chicken or two in your car, sit back and watch the show.
Oh, damn.
Did that, and I put a swan in a locker before.
We might put a possum in the locker. You never know.
Yeah.
Things
or
happen.
Chicken in the locker, chicken in the paddy wagon, chicken in the car. Live chickens are great. First time I did it, though, I'm like, what's taking so long? I'm like, oh, no, I want them alive. He goes, oh, sorry. I'm sitting here talking. I said, yo, we're going to free two chickens, man. We're doing a good thing.
Oh, my goodness.
They dead.
Did you take the chicken?
I didn't take the two dead ones. I said, give me two live ones. He goes, oh, you play joke. I said, yes, we're playing jokes.
Yeah, we could do episodes just on pranks, on police pranks on each other.
I have a shitload of them.
Yeah, I bet you do.
Yeah, when I was doing the undercover thing, our field unit, our great narcotics field unit that was so proud, they followed me around most of the damn RNC. Yep.
You got that shady look about you, man.
And then, so I started to have a little bit of fun with him. I said, watch this. I said, watch all these guys get up. And I was in Love Park, and I was with one of my partners. I just got up and started running, and they didn't know what to do. They're running around. They're trying to follow me. I'm laughing.
Stirring that pot. Stirring that pot. Thank you. Nick, it's been an honor having you here on the show. Thank you, brother.
It was an honor. Thanks, man.
Really. And anything we can do to help promote your show, we will. Ladies and gentlemen, again, that's Good Cop, Bad Cop podcast. Go check it out, especially on YouTube. Hit that subscribe button. Help them grow up so they can start making some advertising money off of that. That's how you grow a podcast. You know, this, if you break down the amount of hours that you spend doing a podcast into an hourly pay, it's not a dollar an hour. It's amazing the time that this takes.
No, I've lost a lot of money. I haven't made anything yet. So hopefully that'll start coming. I want to be able to do this time next year, full time.
There you go. So for all our loyal listeners, thank you again for coming back every week. You folks keep me motivated. You're the reason I do this, that, and my love for the law enforcement community and the heroes that are out there, to include our military and our other first responders. And I bring a bad guy on here occasionally just so you can hear what that side of the story is like. You seem to like that, and I'll continue to do it. But I know why you keep coming back, and you hear me say this every week. You come back because you enjoy playing the biggest, the baddest, the most dangerous game of all. And what's that game? It's the game of crimes.
Yeah.
God bless everybody. We'll see you next week. Nick, thank you so much, brother.
Thanks, man.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.